Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
So the big question now is, who will be the next Pope? The 130-member College of Cardinals will gather in just under a month's time to make that choice. It may take days, even weeks. Father Frank Brennan from Australia's Catholic University is one of Australia's most prominent Catholic thinkers, and he's joining us now to look at the current field of candidates and to the future of his church under a new pope. Father Frank Brennan, welcome to Open House.
Thank you. Good evening. Good to be with you.
Thanks very much for joining us. My guess is you two were as shocked as anyone else by the Pope's announcement.
I was surprised. I mean, given it hasn't happened for 600 years, and given that his predecessor, of whom he thought so highly, wanted to endure publicly his diminishment and ailing and physical ill health, I thought that Benedict would probably go the same way.
Are you surprised that it was this Pope, Benedict XVI, who was confident enough, courageous enough to break those 600 years of tradition?
Not so much surprise now. In hindsight, I'd say more delighted. I presume, given the theology of Benedict, that if he thought he was only confronting physical impairment, then I think he probably would have done what John Paul II did. But given that he is a very intelligent, reflective, Germanic theologian in the papacy, I think his real fear was about the prospect of imminent intellectual impairment, and I think he saw that there were real risks to the office of the papacy if its incumbent was someone who did suffer such intellectual impairment. And I think the heartening thing for all of us is that he's been sufficiently central to the papacy of John Paul II. He was sufficiently central to a lot of the thinking of Vatican II, though he developed a more conservative approach to it thereafter, that in a sense it was because of his conservatism that it became all the more acceptable that his resignation would be accepted and even praised by Catholics generally.
Which takes, as we've been saying, both confidence and courage.
Oh, no doubt. And I think that, I mean, the man is a theologian of undoubted repute, but he's also been there in the Vatican for a very long time, having been the head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith for John Paul II. And so, really, he's been privy to everything that's gone on at the highest level of the Church, really, for the last 35 years.
So as we look to the future, can you first of all take us through this age-old process of how the next Pope will be chosen?
Well, he'll be chosen by the College of Cardinals, as you said, under the rules that have been set down in recent years. It's cardinals under the age of 80 who have a vote. I think there are about 130 of them, and it requires a two-thirds vote in favour of a particular candidate, and I think they only have a couple of votes a day. And as most people will know, that if there is not an adequate majority that emerges, then we see the ballots destroyed and the black smoke go up. But once there is a significant majority, then the white smoke goes up and we have a new pope.
In the age in which we live, you're confident the puff of white smoke won't be beaten by Twitter?
I'm fairly confident in that usually the rules of the conclave are that none of that sort of communication technology is allowed inside, and I'd be sufficiently certain that the cardinals will not breach that, particularly, presumably, with Twitter, that it would be readily identifiable who the offending cardinal was.
To what extent is this a political decision, and to what extent is the process a political decision with a choice that this College of Cardinals faces?
Any decision of this sort, in purely human terms, you could put in political terms, not in terms of party politics or political philosophy, but rather, I mean, what is politics in its purest form? Politics is about the method of resolving issues where there's not a self-evident conclusion. And so where you've got a number of talented individuals with different gifts who are available, then definitely there'll be assessments being made of those individuals, and I dare say there'll be some canvassing going on,
yes,
and some caucusing going on, and all of that we understand as politics. For those of us who are people of faith, we also believe, of course, that the Holy Spirit is alive and active in this process, and hopefully the cardinals bring to the disposition something of the indifference and a prayerful mentality where they're asking in humility before God what is for the good of the church.
Will the enduring presence of the former Pope Benedict, maybe without even saying a word, will he in any way have an influence on how the cardinals will be thinking, how they'll be voting?
My own view is it won't make any difference, to put it as respectfully as possible, whether Benedict is alive or dead. But having said that, what we have to understand is that, of course, all of these cardinals were appointed either by Benedict or John Paul II. And that being the case, the mindset of the College of Cardinals generally, you would think, would coincide fairly well within the broad contours of the thinking of Benedict.
Over the last couple of days, the well-known Geelong priest, Father Kevin Dillon, has said that in the light of Benedict's decision, this might be the time to consider limiting papal reigns to set periods because of the magnitude of the task, and Benedict has spoken about that himself. It's a role no one should be expected to take on indefinitely. What do you think about that?
I think that's very unlikely. If I might blow the Jesuit trumpet for a moment, because I'm a Jesuit priest.
Feel free.
There are two offices in the church which traditionally have been lifetime appointments, and they are the papacy and the Superior General of the Jesuits, sometimes referred to as the Black Pope. Now, the last two Superiors General of the Jesuits have resigned, and the first one to do so was Father Pedro Arrupe, and it was known at the time when he was wanting to resign that John Paul II was very unhappy at that. Now, I think given that there have now been two successful resignations by Jesuit generals and that the second resignation was almost unremarkable, I think the same thing will happen with the papacy. Yes, it's quite remarkable. This is the first resignation in 600 years, but I think particularly with the aging of the population, with the availability of good medical care, even in Rome it might be said, then you expect that people will live a much longer age. But as Benedict has indicated, even if the flesh be willing, sometimes the mind starts to give out. And that being the case, I think rather than moving promptly to fix time limits, I can't see the cardinals coming at that, but I think there would be a greater acceptance of the notion that a pope may want to be in a situation to retire or resign. What might also become an issue in the future is whether or not there should be some checks and balances put in whereby the cardinals could be checking whether or not the Pope was still up to his game intellectually without undermining the integrity of the office.
So can we look at those considered to be the leading candidates to be the next Pope? And before we get to personalities, it's a great deal of attention this time on where the next Pope may come from.
Yes. The talk about where, I think it has a place, but I think maybe it's been overplayed in some of the media. I mean, let's look at it in these terms. There's no doubt in terms of the demography of modern Catholicism that, I mean, you can no longer say the Catholic Church is Europe and Europe is the Church. Mm. And definitely in terms of demography, you've got increasing numbers of Catholics, particularly in Africa, through Asia, and Latin and South America. And so you might say, well, given there hasn't been a pope from any of those places for a very long time, it might be an appropriate time. So that's one thing in the mix. But another thing in the mix, I would think, is that if you think of the College of Cardinals, I think of those who will have a vote, about 28 of them are Italian. There have been issues to do with the competence of the administration of the Vatican in recent times. There's been Vatti leaks, there's been the butler, there's been the bank, and all of those sorts of questions, as well as, of course, substantive questions about what's the role of the Vatican administration in overseeing things like the abuse crisis in countries like the United States and in Australia. Now, if you're an Italian cardinal, you probably sit there saying your prayers at night thinking to yourself, well, it's been 35 years when we've had non-Italians there at the helm, namely John Paul II from Poland and then Benedict from Germany. And in those 35 years, there have been things like fatty leaks, etc., which they might be saying to themselves didn't happen in our day. And they might be thinking to themselves also that we Italians, you know, we're born with this in our blood. So I think there may well be a push on to say that, well, rather than looking outside Europe, it might be time to return to Italy. I think that force, if you like, will be as great as that for looking outside of Europe.
Despite the explosive, in many ways, nature of the faith in regions like South America.
Sure. But, I mean, definitely, you could look at someone like, I mean, Cardinal Rodriguez, who I've met a couple of times here in Australia, who's the head of Caritas Internacional from Honduras. People say, well, he might be a likely contender. You also hear it being said that Cardinal Thurkson, an African who's there as the head of the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace, that he might be an option. But with all respect to him, I think he's given a couple of interviews in recent days which seem to put himself out there almost as being a candidate, and I can't imagine that going down too well with a lot of his fellow cardinals.
So who do you believe will be the most likely candidate or candidates?
Look, it's like betting on the Melbourne Cup, yes. And I have never lived and worked in Rome, so I'd be one of those mug punters who may pick a winner on the occasion of a Melbourne Cup, but most probably won't. But going on my instincts and what I've heard about the Italian stable, I mean, definitely people have put people like Scola, the Cardinal Archbishop of Milan, up there. He was a very strong John Paul II supporter. He wrote a book on sexuality and marriage, which reflected a lot of what John Paul II used to write, a book entitled The Nuptial Mystery. I read some very critical critiques of that book, but definitely he's one who's seen to be within the mainstream of the theology which has been dominating the Vatican these last 35 years. He'd be a possibility. Ravisi is another Italian name you hear, but as they often say, the person who goes in Pope to a conclave usually comes out a cardinal.
Yes. And in terms of the character of the next Pope, his theological thought, even his agenda, what will be some of the factors uppermost in the minds of these cardinals?
Good question. I mean, particularly given that Benedict has been such an academic, reflective theologian, and given that John Paul II strutted the world stage and dominated the papacy over such a protracted period, I mean, a 27-year papacy, I would think that one of the things occupying them will be the thought that this will be the first pope since the Second Vatican Council who did not attend the Second Vatican Council.
Yes.
Now, given that the Second Vatican Council was the big game changer in terms of the way the Catholic Church saw itself in the world, and given that there's been a strong debate that's continued within the Catholic Church as to whether Vatican II was primarily about continuity of the tradition or a break with the tradition, I think that a lot of the cardinals, given their pedigrees, will be looking for the assurance that whoever is chosen is someone who can assure the conservative branch of the church that continuity is here at play, but someone who will be supple enough of mind and attentive enough to world politics and events such as unfolding in the United States to be able to deftly handle engagement in the public square. Whether or not such an individual is there in the group, I don't know.
You do a lot of thinking about the role of the church in our society today. How do you believe the next pope should influence the Catholic Church and the world in the decade to come?
I think one of the strengths that will be shown of Benedict is, though he spent many years as the enforcer for John Paul II as the head of the Congregation for Doctrine of the Faith, when it came to his encyclical letters, which are the formal teaching letters which are published by popes, I mean, he went back to basics and he reflected very spiritually on notions of love, of charity, of truth and of hope. And I think there'll be a great desire for a continuation of that sort of pastoral, spiritual reflection. But I think there'll also be a pining for someone who's got a little more of the worldly political sense. I mean, no doubt, particularly when Benedict, like, at the time of the second last US election, there were some utterances of his which didn't prove very helpful in dealing with the nuances of dealing with engaging in the public square of a pluralist democratic society. So I think if there can be someone who can bring that mix, plus something of the charism and the charisma of John Paul II, then that will be seen to be desirable.
It'll be keenly watched, I'm sure. Father Frank Brennan, thank you so much indeed for joining us on Open House.
Pleasure. Good to be with you. Thank you. And we'll watch the results with interest when that white smoke pours up.
Puffs up. I hope we talk soon.
Thank you. See you.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.